just a baby. Before I could speak, I would line up all my letter blocks alphabetically. Now it's my vocation and my passion to assign every decimal numbered shelf to every decimal numbered spine. I'm alive.
Well, I hope you can tell from that tune that you are tuned in to the Library Show on KCAW Raven Radio right here in Sitka, Alaska. And it's a place where we like to talk about books and ideas and all the wonderful stuff you can find at the library. And one thing that I always like to mention is that, of course, you're not limited to what you find on the shelves in the library. This library is unusually generous in terms of all of the items that people might want. If they don't have them on the shelf, then they are really wonderful about interlibrary loaning things. And so never hesitate to request if you don't find it there. And we had such a good time a number of weeks ago, just completely ran out of time, that I asked Al Gallo to come back. And he very kindly assented. So welcome to the Library Show.
Good to see you again. it's fun to be back. I wanted to ask you, who is the singer in the opening song?
His name is John Rundman. Yeah, someone that I mentioned that was his song said, "Oh, I can't believe you know." Was familiar with him, and I just happened to, I was looking for a theme song when we started this show a number of years ago, and I just did a search, and there were actually a number of fun songs about libraries, but this is the one that kind of fit, you know, what we were doing, so yeah.
It's a great song, and very nice lyrics. I especially listened this time, and they're really nice lyrics.
Well, one of these days I'll play the whole thing through.
Yeah, you should. You should. I'm surprised you haven't gotten a request for it.
I don't know. Is that a comment on how many people are listening? I don't know. Well, let's get to the heart of the matter, since I know you have quite a few things that we'd like to talk about. So what do you have in your book bag, Al?
Well, I brought 6 books in. I suppose I could start... I think I'm going to start with Robert Parker. I just finished this book, and I guess why I want to start with it is, and it's a library story, the head librarian in Talkeetna, Ann Yaden, was and is a big Robert Parker fan. So whenever a new book would come out, either I would tell her or she would tell me, but she always got it first.
Oh, she did.
Oh, she did. She was like, you know, when it comes in, Ed and I are going to read it first, and then you can get it.
Well, very so good. Well, now you may not have quite that same battle to fight on.
No. So I guess, as some people know, Robert Parker was, I love in the back, he's long considered the undisputed dean of American crime fiction. He actually wrote 70 books.
He has written a lot. I knew when I was at the public library that as soon as you saw a new Robert Parker title come out, you better get it, because you know, people were going to are very aware when they have a favorite author. If a new book is coming out, they're going to be right there on your heels asking for it.
Yeah, and what is amazing, you know, the estate, his wife, Joan, who he always writes about in the book, one of the characters is named Joan. She's still living. But the thing that amazes me, the estate, there's in the 70 books that he wrote the Parker, the Spencer novels, which I guess I found out a couple of years ago. That actually was made a movie, and Tom Selleck played Spencer. But there's a man who writes the Spencer novels, Ace Atkins. And then there's the Jesse Stone novels, which this was, The Devil Wins.
Oh, so he's got a couple series going with discrete characters.
Exactly. And then Reed Farrell Coleman writes those. And then he also has, which I love, the Cole Hitch Westerns. They're great Westerns. And Robert Knott writes those. But it just amazes me that it takes three writers to continue in that vein. And he's just, I just always adored Parker's very short staccato type reading, short sentences, very short paragraphs. And this book, Reed Farrell does a great job. It is called The Devil Wins. And it's a Jesse Stone novel, which takes, Jesse Stone is a fictitious sheriff in Paradise, which is up on the East Coast, up near Boston.
Okay.
That's all I'll say, but it's great read. I read it in a night.
Good.
It's one of those novels that you read and you just can't put down.
Put down, that's
yep.
right.
And let's see, what were we talking about, Kim Hecox, because
right.
you're in the process of reading.
I am. Let's see. The
Rhythm of the Wild.
Rhythm of the Wild, A Life Inspired by Alaska's Denali National
yeah,
Park.
Yeah, which, that book, I read it just, having spent 10 years in Denali, I read that book and I just was like, he put me back there. Kim, I think anybody who ever goes to Denali and spends any kind of time there, it's just, it grips you and it never lets go. It really doesn't. But I'm reading the third book. He wrote three.
Okay.
He wrote John Muir's The Ice That Started a Fire was the first one.
Okay.
And then he wrote Rhythm of the Wild, and which are both nonfiction. And then he wrote a just absolutely wonderful book called Jimmy Bluefeather.
Now, is that fairly recent that he wrote the Jimmy Bluefeather? Because I think, isn't this, well, I don't know.
Look in the, I think he wrote these all within, third printing was 2015. I think he wrote okay. all these within the period of like 18 months.
Okay.
Which is amazing. But this Jimmy Bluefeather, I'm almost finished with it.
Well, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, mainly there's the main character is Old Keb Wisting, and he's somewhere around 95 years old.
One of those old geezers in Alaska. Huh?
Exactly. And there's a bunch of people. He has grandsons and granddaughters, and he's just, oh, it's like I mentioned to you before I read it, very much reminded me of John Straley and his books and his characters. And he has a fictitious town called Jingcat, and it's in Southeast, you know, and he talks about various things. And there's stuff that just sticks out, and I'd like to read a little bit.
Okay, there's a, is it a mystery like John Straley's, or is it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a great mystery.
And he actually, I think, is out of, I think he lives in Gustavus.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. He and his wife, Melanie, were rangers at one time up in Denali
right.
and then moved down to Gustavus. So I'll read just this little bit. These Frenchmen had a grasp of the past that went back to when Great Raven was an egg. They spoke of millions of years ago when parts of Alaska skidded into each other and struck there to make what it is today. Add to that the cutting and carving by glaciers that a few hundred years ago were much bigger than they are today, the weight of all that ice so great that it depressed the crust of the earth throughout the entire region. Now, with the big glaciers gone, the land was rising, rebounding. He knew of piers and canneries built 100 years ago that now stood rotting and moss-covered in the forest, 50 feet from the highest high tide. The Dungas Bay Cannery, where he was born, was like this, though he hadn't been there in a long time. Islands once near the mainland, separated by shallow water at high tide, were now part of the mainland as peninsulas. Was the land still rising? Could people rebound too, entire ways of life? The only rebound talked about in Jingcat these days was the basketball rebound, the tangle of elbows and legs beneath the net, and people screaming from the bleachers if they were in the game too.
Oh, very good. And, of course, we all know about basketball in Alaska, huh?
Exactly. So there's basketball in there, his grandson. It's just a fascinating read. Kim is, he's one of my idols.
Well, I think I just mentioned that what I notice, especially in the Rhythm of the Wild, is he's absolutely meticulous about The details when he's describing some maybe estuary or something, and he'll be going along, and then the last part of that last sentence, he just throws in a perfect little like grace note in music that you just go, oh, he just nails it, you know. And so he is on detail. He's just marvelous.
I find he's one of those readers that I go back, like just what you were saying. I find that so captivating at whatever he's finishing. It's like I want to savor it again.
Right.
Because I find with good books, I read too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I need to go back and savor those. So I find that as I'm getting older, I do that more.
Yeah.
I'll go back and read a particular paragraph. It's funny now, I'll put markers in books. I have a lot of books that have like 3 and 4 markers because I read something and was like, ooh.
Ooh, that was nice.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was good.
Well, what else have you got in your book bag?
Well, we had talked on the last time we did the show together about Gordon Haber. The late Gordon Haber wrote a book, Among Wolves, which was his 43-year study of wolves in Denali. And I finished that, and there was a passage in there that it just struck me. So I made a copy, and I'd like to read that. And again, it's from the late Gordon Haber, and the book is called Among Wolves. Of all the arguments considered in how to manage wildlife, perhaps the most important has to do with diversity, the variety of life about us. For full expression of its marvelous potentials, the human mind needs to grow in as varied an atmosphere as possible. Variety of all forms, not only biological, but cultural and social, is needed to stimulate our thinking and to sharpen our powers of imagination. It freshens our ability to find new solutions to old problems and leads to higher levels of creativity. Variety nurtures the mind and the spirit, and it is as vital to our well-being as the food we eat. In short, it helps to make us more human. And of course, he's referring, Gordon was such a student of the interaction of the wolf family and that whole social structure of wolves. And that book, if I had a library, that book would be in my library.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I move around too much to have a permanent library anymore, but yeah, Gordon's books and of course Kim's.
Well, you know, I guess that's why it's handy to have a public library. You know, you don't have to own things. You can request that they purchase them. So it's a good deal.
And I imagine you're going to talk a little bit today about their big goings on this Sunday.
Well, this is going to air after that.
Okay,
the big
that's
goings
right.
On, but yeah, I think there's a, I'm hoping that I was worked really hard on that, you know, making that happen with an incredible library board and wonderful help from the city, from Michael Harmon, all the way through the engineering department and public works, finance. It was really a huge joint effort, and I'm hoping that it will bless the community for a long time to come, because one of the efforts was to make that space very versatile. So I'm hoping that all those things come together and that people really enjoy it. And you can't, I don't think I know another library that has a view like you get in that one.
Yeah, it's an amazing view. So, I just, the structure is wonderful. I love the light.
Yep.
How when you walk in, it's just everything is so open.
Yes.
And the addition of the Trinoceros Rex is just awesome.
That's a pretty amazing creation that he came up with. And I like one of the parts of it, and then we'll get back to the reading, is that I enjoy the architect. And when he made that beautiful entrance with all the glass and the light, because before it had a very an overhang that was quite... it was a large overhang, and it did end up protecting the building, but it also cut out it didn't feel real welcoming to me. And to me now, the entrance, it's kind of like a V, and I see that as a bird taking wing. And what better place to take wing, you know, either with imagination or whatever, than a library? So to me, that was very symbolic of, you know, that's a place to go to really soar.
Well, I just thank you and thank all the folks that are at the library. It's just, I don't know what I'd do without a library.
Yeah, me neither.
I'd be lost. I really would. It was interesting. I just did a phone interview to work at volunteer at Isle Royale, and the cultural interpreter asked me if I had any questions about the job, and my first question was, yes, is there a library on the island? And then she laughed.
Well, I was, yeah, libraries are pretty invaluable to a good civic society. So let's move on.
Okay.
What else have you got?
Well, this is very current, since we're going through all this rigmarole about the Supreme Court. I'll leave the politics out of it, but I just finished a book, which was, I found it fun. The name of the book is Notorious R.B.G., and the R.B.G. stands for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, written by two women, younger. I want to say that Aaron and I can't remember the other lady's name. I should have written it down, but it's a very different book, both in its size, its feel. It's a very, I'm guessing it's like a 21st century book. There's some great pictures, all kinds of stuff. I would highly recommend, if nothing else, go look at it. It's nice to hold. But there was a rap song that was written about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Yeah. So I'll read the introduction, and then I'll read the verse. I'm not going to sing it, folks, so forget it. So the introduction is, yeah, this song is dedicated to all the judges that told me I'd never amount to nothing because of my gender, to all the people that lived in their ivory towers that I was hustling in front of, that tried to buy me off by putting Susan B. Anthony on the dollar, and all the women in the struggle. You know what I mean. Okay, here's the verse. It was all a dream back when I argued Reed versus Reed. Then once they put Sandy D up in the dub DC, Janet Reno made the call. When Slick Willie chose me to sit, and now that I've been installed, I rocked the black robe with my jabot, sipping tea while reading among tales of woe. Way back when I caught a lot of flack, I held back. Now look where I'm at. Remember Frankfurter? Duh-ha. He never thought a woman could go this far. Now I'm in the limelight because I decide right. Court has moved right, but my dissents get sights. Born sinner, but definitely a winner. Defending women's rights because, unlike them, I've been her. Peace to Willie, Jimmy C., and guess who? Irwin Griswold, the ACLU. I'm blowing up the glass ceiling. For good. Call the chamber. Same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know, Nino. And then the chorus is, you've been fighting for equal rights. From Kiki to RBG, you've reached those heights. You always fight for equal justice. A diva in our eyes. Originalists can't touch this.
Very fun.
Isn't it? It's just, I just... roared.
So was the book, was it a like a biography of her?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Very much so. Talked about her. She had an amazing relationship with her husband. There's Marty Ginsburg, who has since passed, and there's a recipe in the book, one of Marty's favorites. But yeah, great pictures of her back in her college days, and just I like her anyway. I think she just rocks. And after reading it, I like her even more.
Well, I saw her speak, and she's really articulate. And I think Sandra Day O'Connor, it seems like, got a lot of attention for a long while. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg maybe not as much, and I feel as though she's really come into the limelight. And she's so articulate. And my feeling from when I've heard her speak is she's ultimately very fair. And I thought it was interesting with when Scalia, there was a lot of conversation that he just passed away.
Correct.
And that they actually had a remarkable relationship.
Oh, yeah, they were good buddies. And they actually appeared on Broadway in a play together.
Is that right?
Yeah, no, they were good friends. They had lunch together. She talks about that in the book. Yeah, she just, I like what you said. I think she's fair.
Yes.
She takes on the merits. And I think the fact that she could be friend with somebody who was her total opposite speaks volumes.
And I wish that we could see that sort of, you know, respect and relationship for people who are maybe almost polar opposites in their thinking about things still are able to have high regard for one another and, in fact, become friends. So what was the name of that book?
Notorious R.B.G.
Okay, yep. Great.
And, you know, I guess since we're in the political realm, I just popped that P there, I finished another great book called Those Angry Days, written by Lynn Olson. And it's about Roosevelt, Lindbergh, and America's fight over World War II. And it takes place from 1939 to 1941. And an excellent historical read. In the back, people like Madeleine Albright, Tom Brokaw, Chris Matthews talk about historically how important this is. But what I really found interesting in this book was that, you know, Lindbergh was an isolationist.
Right.
But once the war started, he wanted to come back into the military. And after a time, they let him back in. But what I really found interesting, when Roosevelt ran against Wendell Willkie, that they had a lot of similarities. There was very few things that separated Wendell Willkie from Franklin Roosevelt. And Willkie actually... There were several instances of them in the book where, because this is the period leading up to World War II, and there was a lot of like hush-hush stuff going on, that they asked the Willkie campaign not to reveal things, and Willkie totally agreed to it. So I'm a political junkie.
Well, now, why is it called Those Angry Days?
Well, because up to the war, there was... In America, there were many senators, many businessmen, many newspaper editors that did not want America anywhere near the war.
Okay, that's right.
They wanted no parts of it. It wasn't our war, and you have to remember at that time it was still fresh that in World War I, America lost 50,000 men, which compared to what was lost in Europe was a drop in the bucket. But I think it was that shock of losing that many men. And, of course, everything had – military-wise, everything had improved, unfortunately.
Right.
You know, guns,
planes were faster.
Airplanes, everything.
Right.
So, yeah, but that's why it was called Those Angry Days. But and once Pearl Harbor happened – everybody coalesced
around. There was no turning back.
Yeah. I mean, it was inevitable. I guess after that, I'm going to have to talk about, and it's interesting because they talk about Churchill in These Angry Days. And when I was in the library the other day, there was a book. It's called The Churchill Factor, How One Man Made History, written by a man named Boris Johnson, who actually... quite interesting. He worked in the newspaper business in England, but he was in the House of Commons and then was elected mayor of London. So this is quite a good read. And I'm about 70 pages in.
Well, does it start? My understanding was Churchill was sort of on the outs, I think, before the war started. He politically wasn't... I mean, we all think of Churchill, as at least I do, as being really a huge factor in fighting against the Germans and driving England forward, I guess you could say, to not lose faith that you know, that they could prevail. But he was a little bit of a controversial figure, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, he changed political parties three times in his life. You know, it was kind of like the way the wind was blowing. But, you know, in a way, I kind of have to admire that because he was not afraid to change. You know, it's kind of like anymore everything has to be set in stone. Well, life is not set in stone. I don't think it is.
No.
I mean, I don't know about you, but my life is always changing. And I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, now, one of the things that I read already in there, and you're right, he was not in power. It was Clement Attlee and Lord Halifax. And, you know, there was talk that Britain was going to acquiesce to the Germans and become like a satellite. And Churchill said, I'd rather roll in my own blood in the street than submit to the Huns. And he just, you know, I think in Britain's dark hour, he, by the strength of his convictions, and I think there's a great picture in here. He's touring the ruins after the bombing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just see the way people are looking at him, that they looked up to him. There's the...
Oh, okay. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, you forget how devastating. And I'm often astonished how quickly things, in a way, rebuild after the war. When you look at a picture like this, and I'm looking at a picture of Hitler, and with him are Clemmy and the U.S. ambassador, John Gilbert. But it's just rubble. What's left is rubble and people standing in the rubble. And to, you know, to come back from something like that, I always find pretty amazing.
And I think one other thing I loved about him, I guess this will be all right to read. It's kind of and it's an introduction, because obviously he was very irascible. But there was, they were telling stories one time, and they told one where the socialist MP, Bessie Braddock, allegedly told Churchill that he was drunk, and he replied with astonishing rudeness that she was ugly and he would be sober in the morning.
Well, that's actually pretty witty, isn't it? And so that is the Churchill Factor.
Right, written by a man, like I said, Boris Johnson.
Boris Johnson.
Who
okay.
was an MP and then was the mayor of London. So.
Okay, well, let's take another... Let's see. Let's just I think we probably can only review the titles that you have.
Yeah, I'm reading Amy Winehouse's book, written by her mother, Janice Winehouse.
And you said that was quite a good read.
Oh, it's great. Loving Amy. And I would tell all the listeners, go online and listen to Amy's duet with Tony Bennett, Body and Soul.
Oh, yes.
And then the last one that I'm still reading is War of the Whales, about... an incident in the Bahamas in 2000 where a bunch of whales got beached because of sonar signals from the Navy.
And they could determine that that was what caused the whales to beach.
Correct. And this is a great book. What I really like is at the beginning of each chapter, there's a great illustration of all the creatures of the deep, whales, dolphins. Excellent read. War of the Whales, Joshua Horowitz.
Well, okay, and then Robert Parker, The Devil Wins.
Correct.
And that's kind of a crime-fighting novel.
Yes.
We had the Kim Heacock's book. What's that title? Jimmy Blue Feather, which I'm going to grab from you as soon as I can. And Those Angry Days. Well, you have brought a wonderful selection. I see a few in there I'd like to get a hold of. Those all came from the library?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Well, you have been listening to The Library Show on KCAW Raven Radio right here in Sitka, and we hope you'll come back next week to listen to our next show. Thanks very much.